You know why they weren't allowed to go fishing while they were on the ark, right?
Oh, no.
They only had two worms.
Nice. I never heard that one before. Very good.
Yeah, that's not an often heard one, but...
This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 54, recorded on December 8th, 2011. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios. Here in a cold, blustery, and winter-like Bellevue, Nebraska. Actually, a couple inches of snow have come down on my way in from work. It caused us to be a little late in the podcast tonight as the roads were slipping and sliding, or actually my car was slipping and sliding, all over the interstate on the way home. But we did make it, no crashes, and I think winter is finally upon us here in the Midwest. Of course, we post the show each week with world-class show notes done none other than by Andrew out at theaverageguy.tv. Of course, you can contact the show, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, or track me down on Twitter. It's just @JCollison. You can also find us on Facebook or iTunes by searching The Average Guy Podcast. And please leave comments out there, especially on iTunes. That helps with the search rankings. If you like what we do, just throw a little positive comment out there, and that'll move us up just a bit. We've set up all the links that you'd ever need to automatically download the podcast to your iPhone, iPod, iPad, as well as any Android phone or tablet device. Just look over for the iTunes or RSS buttons over at theaverageguy.tv. Actually, that's how I use Beyond Pod on my new Android, and I just set the RSS feeds up. Actually, just I went to theaverageguy.tv in my browser on the phone, clicked on those links, and it asked me, where do you want to do it? Beyond Pod or the music player, and I click Beyond Pod and it set up the feed automatically for me. So nice and easy, and you can do it too. Do it today. All right, a couple guys with me tonight, a couple guys absent. Rich was supposed to be on the show and was not feeling well tonight, and so he is out. Christian was buried with some homework and such, and so whenever Christian is out, we always get the pinch hitter. We call in the left-hander, Gary Johnson. Gary, how are you doing this evening?
Just fine, Jim. Thanks.
Good to have you. It's always good to have you on the show. And actually, 2 weeks in a row, because I think you're scheduled for next week. Did you know that?
That's correct.
All right, good. So we'll get to two consecutive weeks. And then a guy that's looking way too comfortable in the sun. And spring is upon him. Summer will be there before they know it. Andrew Morris down in Melbourne. Andrew, how are you?
Pretty good, thanks, Jim. It's a... steamy 87 degrees down here today.
Nice. 87. That's the American 87, right?
That's the American 87.
No kind of funky Australian 87.
No, I'd be losing about 3 kilo. I'd be losing about 3 kilograms a minute if we're 87 Celsius.
Now 87. That's good. And sunny. I assume the solar panels are in full effect.
I think this week so far we've fed back onto the grid roughly our monthly power bill.
Monthly.
So, monthly.
Nice.
Yeah, so this month we're looking to get back $100 to $150 from the power company.
Nice.
And fully pay for our electricity and natural gas.
Wow. So none of that. You won't have to. That'll all be free. Plus, you'll make $150 from the utilities.
Yeah.
That's a nice deal. Well, you told me. Yeah, you told me when you put those solar panels up that that's quite an investment up on the roof, but. With that kind of dollars, you'll pay that off pretty quick, I would imagine.
Yeah, actually, I was looking at some payback calculations earlier in the week, and I think based on what we've seen since they went up, we're looking at full payback of the outlay around about January to March to 2013.
That's not bad at all.
And then it's money for Jam from there on in.
Yeah, I like it. Very cool. Well, I'm glad to see some progressiveness there with solar panels. We are still here in the U.S. way behind on that. Just not happening as fast as I would like it to. And I think, you had mentioned somewhere between 10 and 15 grand to throw those on your roof. Is that right?
Yeah, thereabouts.
Yeah. And that's a reasonable investment. If I could pull that off here in Nebraska, the summer here, I've mentioned this before, the south-facing roof, which we just got re-roofed. Had a horrendous hailstorm this last summer that just tore my roof to shreds. And we just had that replaced.
love to throw some solar panels up there and take advantage of that. The incentives just still aren't, in, at least in the state of Nebraska, the incentives are still not here. So I'm kind of waiting for the state to kick in some cash and apply some incentives, some tax rebates, something. Yeah, I assume you had some rebates on those?
Yeah, we had a fairly significant rebate. So our outlay was a bit over, I think it was around about $12,500. And I think the rebate we got from the government was about $15,000.
Hmm. So more than half.
Yeah, and the scheme's constantly changing. I mean, we get 66 cents a kilowatt hour that we feed onto the grid back from our retailer. That deal ended at the end of September this year. So people who are new subscribers are getting one for one. So, still not a bad deal.
Yeah.
You know, if you can halve your bill by, you know, whacking some silicon on your roof, why not?
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. Gary, would you, you ever thought about putting solar panels up on the roof?
Well, seeing as how I haven't seen the sun in about 6 weeks.
Maybe not, huh?
Not
so good there in Buffalo.
Here. And then not only that, I mean, we're getting like 6 to 9 inches of snow tonight. So
yeah.
What are you going to do with a solar panel when there's 3 inches of snow on top of it?
No, right on. Right on.
Yeah.
And you guys get your annual snowfall is pretty high, right, there in the Buffalo area?
Yeah, we're one of the highest in the country.
Right. Yeah. So maybe not, doesn't make sense. We here in Nebraska, they would be a wash in the winter, but I think in the summer I could generate some power that might. We are sunny and open and hot, and I think I could generate some power throughout the summertime. Although I would be worried we get that nasty stuff called hail, and I would be worried that they would have to be some kind of hail resistant if I was going to throw them up there, because we just got shredded. Like I said, we got shredded, but. Oh, baseball size hail. That's the biggest I've ever seen it here in Bellevue in the 20 years I've lived here.
And what about wind speeds?
Wind speeds are solid. Yeah. I mean, we get some gusts of 60, 70, 80 miles an hour at times. You know, we're in tornado. We're in the northern part of Tornado Alley here in the Midwest. And so, yeah, you're right. We'd make a fin out of them. Maybe the whole house would lift up. You know, make them windproof. Well, anyways.
Either you throw a turbine up there as well and harness the wind and harness the sun. And
That is something that is growing in this area. We have a lot of wind turbines.
Yeah,
don't know if they'll ever break even on them, but they go up, and General Electric makes a lot of money. But
they are becoming popular.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic at the moment. They've got the global climate summit running at the moment over in Durban in South Africa, and you know, we were watching on the news a couple of nights ago, they're saying, you know, that the Pacific Island countries are rapidly becoming, you know, salt laden, and gonna in the next few years have trouble feeding themselves. So, you know, at some point in time I think people need to, you know, start removing that dependency on fossil fuel.
Yeah.
And not quite sure how it's gonna happen.
Interestingly, in the Netherlands, they're actually starting to dismantle some of their wind turbines that were put out in the ocean on the wind farms. Is they're just not cost effective. They can't afford to maintain them.
Yeah.
So they're actually starting to dismantle some of them.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, it's, some of that stuff's worth a try. I mean, we got to figure something out. It's not, you know, eventually we're going to run out of oil.
Fusion.
That will happen.
Perpetual motion.
So it.
Fusion.
Or just everybody runs everywhere. How about that? That would be.
Yeah, there you go.
Spot the athlete amongst us.
Good for you.
Or we could go back to horses and buggies.
I was watching the latest. We rented Sherlock Holmes, the newest Sherlock Holmes movie, because the new movie comes out here on December 16th. And we were big fans of that movie. And in one of the scenes they show, they're going, you know, it's a downtown London and it's horse and carriage and the street is dirt. That had to be horrific. I just can't. Yeah.
You just have to learn to watch where you walk.
When it's everywhere, I'm just not sure, you know, it must've just been a different day, you know, and it just had to smell everywhere. And so I'm not ready to go back to horse and buggy, but certainly I think we're gonna have to get smarter about our energy consumption and the way we do it. Certainly batteries are not the alternative, because they are harder on the environment than just about anything when you try and get rid of them. And so I don't know. We not to turn this into a political recycling or fuel efficiency show, but it's certainly technology will be out in the forefront of that, and it'll be interesting to see with what kind of technologies that they come up with, because we'll run out of things to burn. I mean, we'll run out of coal and we'll run out of gas, and burning those things just won't be that efficient.
Oh, that just last comment on energy. There's a great little movie that's actually on tonight on I think it's one of the cable channels. It's, if you've never seen it, it's a fun watch. It's called Simply Moon. And the premise is that we've got the fusion reactors up and running, but we need hydrogen 3 or something that the moon has plenty of.
Oh.
And helium 3.
Okay.
I think it's H3. The whole concept is there's this base on the moon that's almost 100% automated with these harvesters that collect the ore and get it ready for shipping. And there's this one guy that mans the station. And it's got an interesting plot. Hmm. It's fun to watch. And it's on cable tonight. And
interesting.
I forget which one. But if you ever get the chance to see it, it's just, the simple name is Moon. It was a low budget flick, but it's really well done.
Very good.
Okay.
I have never seen that, but it sounds like a good late Friday night movie to watch, maybe, you know, just before you go to bed.
Chilling.
Well, let's talk a little technology. I'll start. I spent the last couple weeks, actually the last couple months, kind of deciding on some new PC purchases. And I actually had last week, I think I talked a little bit, I'd pulled the trigger on a Lenovo Q180 that I was going to use as a home server version 2 box. And then I was carefully looking over the email confirmation. And I looked at the ship date. I was like, oh, because I thought it had said the 9th. And so I was looking for it. And then I was like, oh, so it'll be here on the 9th. And then I read it. It said January 9th. I was like, oh, I don't want to wait another month for that. So I did jump in, canceled that order. It was a Black Friday deal, and I did get some good money off on it. But in the meantime, the HP microserver, the N40L version of that, had gone on sale at Newegg for $250 during the Black Friday sales, and I picked one of those up. It came in the mail on Monday. I actually have that set up, and if you're seeing the video, it's right behind me there. 4 bays, not hot swappable, as we found out tonight.
The hard way.
And even if it was hot swappable, you can't pull the system drive and expect it to keep running. Although I was surprised it actually ran for, I don't know, 5 minutes before it started shutting itself down. Yeah. So it must have had enough information in memory. It's only got the sys drive in it right now, and I just yanked that thing right out. It does have big stickers on it that say that this is it's a non-hot swappable, you know, that's not meant to be hot swappable. And I just yanked the drive right out. So not advisable. Got that set up and have been working with a Windows 2011 configuration. Pretty excited about having a dedicated box. To this point, I've been doing it all with virtualization. And that's okay. I mean, it works, but it's to have a dedicated box is something that I've been kind of waiting for. So a little Turion 1.6 gigahertz, couple gig of memory in there, and looking forward to throwing 2011 on there in a couple different test configurations, kind of messing around with it. I also ordered a half height USB 3 because I bought the Lenovo to take advantage of USB 3 for the Drobo S that I have that's USB 3. And so I just ordered a half-height USB 3 card that I'll throw in the PCI slot and kind of double up. So I'm going to pair the microserver with the Drobo S. That'll give me the ability of 9 drives in there. And, I should be okay from from a storage standpoint.
Unless you get into video.
No, and that I bought that server intentionally not to do video just because it's not very powerful. And the transcoding would just crush it if you're going to try and do the transcoding there. So up and running, it's in the back. I'm sure I'll reference it from time to time. And in the stuff that we do, it's good to have it. $250 is a great deal. And
did that come with any drives, Jim?
It came with a single 250 gig, 7200 RPM drive. So pretty good deal. It's all complete, Gary. So it's for $250, yep. It's everything you need. Just I took it out of the box and turned it on.
How much RAM?
2 gig. 2 gig, had a 2 gig and a 4 gig configuration. Of course, I can always bump that up to 4 if I want to. I don't, running a single OS on it and Windows Home Server in the configuration I am, 2 gigs should be fine for what I'm doing. Putting two more in there would be pretty a simple task if I find I need to do that.
Yeah, the couple I've built, we've bumped them up to 8 because those, the people using them were transcoding.
Yeah.
And the extra memory gives you transcoding overhead via memory load.
Yeah. Would you really want to transcode, though, with that low power chip? I mean, runs at about 35 watts.
No, I wouldn't.
Full power.
I did a lot of testing over the last year with transcoding. And, of course, you know, I'm a big subsonic user. And basically, I found that if you're going to go with like 1080p, the only thing I have in the house that'll actually do a decent job of transcoding that without a lot of spinning wheel activity and buffering is my desktop, which is a Core i7 quad core. So, yeah, I mean, my AMD quad core chips in my servers, and what have I got? I got an E8400 dual core in my HP home server. Will do a fair job of anything up to 720p. And actually, I can get away with most of the stuff with 1080i with television. Recorded TV will come through. But once you go beyond 1080i, the only thing I got in here that'll handle it is the Core i7 quad core.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, the bottom line is the more CPU power you have, the better off you are. But the neat thing too, I learned, you know, is that if you pre-format your video in a format that whatever you're going to play back on can automatically handle, then you don't have any transcoding and zip,
right.
It just streams direct. And you can do that off of almost any platform as long as you don't have transcoding involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Tim had said in chat, you know, 16 gig of RAM at Newegg today is $69 or $70.
Yeah, and they had 65 on sale today.
Yeah.
16 gig of Ripjaws DDR3.
Max support on this motherboard's 8 gig, so I wouldn't need to go that much. But, yeah, at some point, maybe if I need to, I'll bump that to 4 or 8. I can't see a need for 8 on that little chip. And the intent is to have it be a a low power. I do. I spent some time with Rich this weekend. He was just interested in, you know, I swap PCs with my son, and actually the Skype box I'm using now is a Pentium 4 from like 1969, and it's got 2 gig of RAM in it, and it runs at about 105 watts, right? Just humming along. Probably right now I'm at 85 or 90% CPU just running Skype on this thing, right? So this is how far we've come. In fact, I can check it. I'll check it right now. Let's just take a peek at this. 97. And I don't have the kilowatt meter hooked up to it because I had hooked it up to the micro server. About 100. Yeah, like I said, 100, 105. Micro server runs at a cool, you know, somewhere between 30 and 40, maybe, on a regular basis. I haven't monitored a ton, but I have looked at it and never got it to spike above 40. So definitely a fuel saver, so to speak, when it comes to, you know, operational efficiency. And pretty amazing how far we've come from, you know, they built those chips to get faster and faster and faster. So it seemed like the megahertz war was on. And then we've gone in the reverse direction. The chips have still gotten faster, but they've gotten a ton cooler and a lot more efficient in the process.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at I'm looking at a microserver actually for my next desktop machine.
Really?
Throw a passive video card in it, and should be able to replace what I've got because it'll actually be better powered than what I'm currently using, but draw about a quarter of the power. CPU wise.
Maybe Andrew, I'll take you up on that, and you know, I'll just mess around with it. Maybe I'll throw Windows 7 on a hard drive and throw that in there and see how it does. Gary, you were going to say something.
Yeah, if you build these things, you know, it's just something to be aware of. You can find usually the low power CPUs are harder to find, but if you watch out and you grab them when they're available at a reasonable price, like I've got my my AMD quad core, which runs at 2.6 gigahertz, is a 65 watt rated CPU. And with, what have I got in there? I got like six hard drives in there. And it pulls about 65 watts, which isn't really bad. I mean,
no,
you know,
not for
and it's
quad
got
core.
It's got a ton of power and it's fast. It's got dual LAN in it. So, yeah, you know, you're staying down around 65 watts for something that's on 24/7. It's not a bad deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a lot to be said for that. And you kind of got to watch your chips. I think, you know, I've seen a lot. There's some new Atom chips, 2500 and the D2500s and the D27. Which that Lenovo was, I'm not sure they're even available yet commercially. That was the delay on these Lenovos, is those chips weren't available yet. You can't expect, you know, horsepower out of some of those, but at the same time, for most people, that works just fine. I've got that E350, that AMD 350, and that HP DM1Z little netbook that I've got, Andrew, and that thing hums right along for most. You know, for most applications, if I put a solid state drive in there, the thing would just fly. I would feel, and that's the next kind of the upgrade for it. So there's
I've been looking at a little Zotac machine with the same processor in it to build an HTTP PC.
So right. Yeah, I'd make a great one.
Yeah, something that I'll just, you know, clip onto the back of the television. You know, it comes with an infrared remote, set up for Media Center, and you know. But again, as you said, with an SSD in it, it should fly along.
Go speak of the devil. How long I've been waiting. I just figured I'd check while we were talking. Andrew, maybe they just came out with the Fit PC3.
Ah.
I just happened to think about it because I know we had talked about the Fit PC2, which had the Atom in it.
Oh, yeah.
The 3 is out. So I got the website up. And
is that Fit PC? Fit?
Yeah,
is it called
I went
Fit?
To fit-pc.com.
Okay. And those are ultra small, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're tiny.
Yeah, so I'll have to read through that and get all the hot specs on that and see where that's going.
Actually, I've got one of the thoughts is I've got out in the living room, I've got a shuttle case that has an Atom 525 in it with about 4 gig of RAM. Super cheap to build about a year ago. I put it out there kind of as a stopgap measure for Media Center, and then our Xbox burned out. And so it's doing all the DVD and all the TV recording and such. But I wouldn't mind getting just a little HTPC maybe this spring and then pulling that box back and making a desktop out of it, or making a broadcast server like I have now. Certainly it would run a little more efficiently and better than this P4 that I'm running off. I'll be honest, guys, it's amazing that I've even got this thing running. You know, and what's amazing to me is my kids are playing games on this thing for the last 6 years. I mean, they've really been just killing it. And I thought, we did. I bought this thing from Dell about 6 or 7 or 8 years ago, and it has just hummed along. The hard drive was starting to go bad, and so I replaced that, but it keeps moving along. So doesn't mean they're always gone, but certainly I draw way more power than I should with it. I've got it set to just sleep, and I only use it for the podcast. So when I'm done, it shuts itself down for the most part, goes into a power-saving mode, and basically turns itself off. And I ought to just shut it down, to be honest with you, and then turn it back on during the week when I'm doing the podcast. So check if you ever want to be scared and you think you have an old PC, you can pick yourself up a little kilowatt meter and plug that in. It'll tell you exactly how many watts it's pulling. And if it's 100 or more, you've got a pretty expensive light bulb that you're running all the time.
Oh, yeah.
So
the most powerful Fit PC3 draws 18 watts.
Oh, yeah. 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 And that would run Windows 7 just fine, right? I mean, for most stuff that you're doing, little tiny box, about the size of your hand. I mean, it's not very big at all. So it's pretty amazing where we've gone. Well, last thing for me, last but not least, this weekend, I got tired of my Galaxy S phone. It kept locking up on me and I kept having problems with it. And it was just a little slow, to be honest with you. So I went out, traded it in, and picked up the Galaxy 2. S or Galaxy S2, whatever they you know, dual core 1.6 gigahertz, I believe 1.5 dual core, actually probably more powerful than the PC we were just talking about.
No doubt.
And probably more memory than that. And have had great running Android Gingerbread and a different version. Actually, Samsung has changed the Android version a little bit, even than their original Galaxy phone. A little bit better, worked out some kinks with it. And so it's been a nice little phone to have. Eight megapixel camera in it that takes 1080p video. And I'm pretty excited about it. I'm kind of back on the chain gang, so to speak. With it, I would just felt kind of like that other phone would let me down when I needed it the most. It would just lock up. It almost like knew that I needed it, and then it would be like, "Oh, sorry, I can't do anything for you."
It was calling to me. It was going, Jim.
Yeah, you need I spent upgrade. Too much money on it, but fortunately, I was in a window with Sprint where they are going to honor their Premier program, which I'd been in for the last couple of years, where I got to upgrade every year. But that ends December 31st, and I would have had to wait till next September to upgrade again. So it's one of those kind of deals where you're like, do I wait and go next September, or do I go, I need to go right now before the end of the year? And I just decided to pull the trigger and drop out for a new phone. So far, so good. Dropped the apps on it. Have really liked it. It's got a big screen. One hang up is it's just a little wide for a single hand. And so sometimes if you're trying to single hand it and thumb it, it's just a little too wide, which I'm not complaining about.
I was just going to say, I'll swap you my Evo 3D for that.
The scary thing is you lose grip on it and it starts sliding out of your hand. And so that's you got to be careful not to. Several times I've lost the grip and had to kind of, you know, ninja catch it before it goes to the ground. So
terrible when you feel that you're dropping it. It's like, no,
I'm throwing my body in front of it so it doesn't hit the ground. Yeah. Yeah. So good stuff. So it's been a good solid upgrade for me and have really enjoyed it. So, okay, Andrew, we've neglected your items for the last couple of weeks. You have graciously held back. What do you got for us?
The first one's a bit of a frustration point for me at the moment. Had an old about 3.5-year-old TomTom in-car navigator, which digitizer on it decided it was going to do the bunk on me last week. So the only part of the screen that I can actually press and have anything work now is the far right-hand side, and it makes it feel like I'm pressing the left. So I've been going through the whole exercise of trying to find something in a current sat-nav unit that actually has the features of one that's 3.5 years old.
Yeah. So you're going to – no, you don't want to use your phone for navigation?
Not really. I like to use my phone as a phone.
Okay.
I mean, I like Google Navigation and all, and I've had a go with Navigon and with Copilot on the Android, but I'm running a 1 gigahertz single core phone, and it's a little too much for it. Yeah, it's just a tad slow. You know, it's okay if you need to look up a traffic status with Google Maps or something like that, but it doesn't quite give you the recalculation of a route or something like that. And I don't think the phone-based navigation is quite advanced enough for what I'm looking for at the moment.
Okay, all right.
But it's amazing how frustrating it is to try and find something that ticks all boxes these days.
Well, I mean, I have not looked at a navigation device in 2 years probably. Say that again.
Are you using Google navigation?
Yeah, I just use Google Maps or whatever. Yeah, the nav. In most cases, I'm just using Google navigation now.
Yeah.
And that's worked just fine for me. But is TomTom and Garmin and some of those other, are they still developing? I mean, are they really? I know they've gotten kind of cheap, but are they making upgrades to those things? Do they see that eventually they'll be replaced?
Yeah, I tend to think that they probably will be. I mean, TomTom are definitely moving into the iPhone space, which sort of leaves me thinking, does that mean my next phone may be an iPhone and then I will converge my devices?
Yeah, right. And the answer is yes.
Well, it's definitely a thinking point, isn't it? I mean, if you can mount that phone in the right space on your the dash of your car, and it becomes that all in one device that ticks all the boxes. And you know, maybe that is the way to go. I'm not entirely sure.
That's pretty much what I've done. Is I integrated the Subsonic for the music, which comes in and pipes it to the stereo on Bluetooth. And I've got the navigation up on screen all the time. And if a call comes in, I hit the button on the steering wheel and it answers the phone. And it just switches to whichever one I need when I need it. It automatically turn left, you know, in 500 feet. And, you know, it's all in one device. So for me, it's been a godsend. And it takes a little horsing around to get all three applications working at the same time without, you know, getting it set up properly so they're not stepping over each other incorrectly and whatnot, and passing the audio to the stereo system. But once you get all the kinks worked out, it's way cool.
Yeah, okay.
That's, you know, Gary, go ahead, Andrew.
And are you using the Google navigation as well, Gary?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's Andrew, do you have some reservations about Google navigation?
I tend to think in Australia it's not quite good enough.
Okay.
And we do have the odd period where you go through a black hole for cell phone coverage.
Oh, okay.
So, and unless you got the caching of the map, then I tend to think that you may have the odd time where where do I turn now?
Yeah, but that shouldn't affect it though, because you should be still getting a satellite signal.
Okay, so the map caches to the device.
In a lot of cases, yes.
I've never had a period where I've gone through dead space for cell signal and lost the functionality of the GPS.
Now, I have, Gary. So across western Nebraska, once you get west of Grand Island, it drops. But let me tell you what it does, right? So it drops it down to kind of a basic map. You don't get all the features. But it has the roads. It's got, you know, it's got where it's at, and it stays on because it does stay connected to the GPS.
If they ain't got a cell signal, there ain't nothing else to see anyway.
No, you're probably right, and our friends in Ogallala, Nebraska, might want to differ with you, but they're wrong too. No, you're right. It's at least for Sprint. Now Verizon's probably a little different, but. Across western Nebraska, the Sprint signal is pretty weak, and you need that data signal to get, you know, updated maps. But so, Andrew, when I travel across and I use the GPS, it gets a little spotty, but it keeps. First of all, I'm just traveling. You know, do I really need a GPS to keep me online on the interstate? Right. In that case, but I see your point. I do see your point.
Yeah, I think from my part, I use it a lot as a more accurate speedometer as well. You know, one of the things we have happening here in Australia is we have a lot of speed cameras, be it fixed mobile, you know, red light cameras.
Right.
So, you know, we're always very cognizant of the fact that we need to keep our speed in a legal window, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. In some municipalities here in the U.S. too, that's starting to catch on.
That's depressing.
We don't have that anywhere here in Nebraska, but Iowa does.
It can be carried.
I want to put my foot on the floor, and I don't want to be asked anything about it. I just want to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Andrew, so you're at this point still looking for a replacement.
At the moment, I've resorted to eBay to try and buy the one that's just died.
All right. Yeah. Well, you get used to something, right? You kind of, you know how it works.
Yeah, exactly, and Michelle has exactly the same unit, so you know it means that we transpose everything between the two cars, and it's an interesting challenge, for sure.
Yeah, well, I remember, you know, a couple of years back, GPS units were just everything, and they had their time in the sun, but that sun was not up very long, and I see most folks using their phone or. Putting, you know, what I'm going to look for next is a little carrier for my car that fits this large of a, you know, this large of a phone, because it's so, you know, it's so wide.
They're out there. Mine opens up. Geez, it opens up wide enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I want one of those that sticks to the window and comes down, you know, sticks to that. That's really what I need. And then right up underneath the, the rearview mirror. So
I don't want anything in my field of vision across the dashboard. It's too easy to get something caught in a blind spot. But
yeah. Yeah.
I like it down at dashboard level. I usually mount it right about where the heat registers are on the dashboard.
Yeah, there's a company in the States, I think, called HoldMyPhone.com, who make all screen mounts and dash mounts and whatnot. So that could be an option for you, Jim.
I have to check it out. It's Christmas, and I've already bought too many things for myself, so I've been kind of... I'm just saying. Speaking of buying things for yourself, you're lusting after an Ultrabook, my friend?
Yeah. When I was doing the SatNav recon, I made the mistake of having a look through the computer department as well. And yeah, it's amazing the notebooks that are coming out now that are, you know, Windows platform with the size and look and feel and horsepower of a MacBook Air.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at them going. 9-hour battery life, Core i5 processor, running Windows.
I looked at that Asus ZenBook UX 31. Nice machine.
Yeah. And that one almost looks identical. You could almost send that in for a warranty replacement to Apple.
Yeah.
I thought the same when I looked at that one. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, wow, that is pretty darn close. They didn't do much to try to hide the fact that they ripped off the design.
Yeah, which is interesting, isn't it? Because Apple are all too happy to go after you if you've got a phone that looks like an iPhone.
Right. Andrew, didn't you just get a new laptop for work?
Yeah, I did. I got an EliteBook 8460p.
Okay.
But it's nowhere near as thin as an Ultrabook.
Yeah, it's a little more horsepower, right?
Yeah. You know, it's a Core i5 2460, I think it is. So, you know, as a corporate machine, it's a nice power thing. I can run 4 or 5 different VMs on it at a given time. And Core i5 2520M, sorry. So 2.5 gig. You know, jacked it full of memory. And it's a nice thing, but I'm sort of leaning towards not using my work machine as a personal one anymore.
Yeah. It's a good idea. Kind of separate those out.
Yeah.
What I've found. I mean, I carry two. Which seems silly, but it really is. I don't know. I'm a lot more comfortable with it too.
Yeah. So that's where I'm moving towards, and it becomes the argument I was looking at before, a long time ago, was I'll get a MacBook, you know, form factor, et cetera. And now I'm leaning back towards Windows because I really don't know that I want the learning curve.
Yeah, you almost had Mike Howard crawling through the Skype chat. Yeah, I actually run the show. I run the producer, the studio software off the Mac here. I've got a Mac G4. It's super old, but that's not that it's good or bad or different. I just don't want to relearn all that. You know, I don't want to have to figure all that stuff out where all the little ins and outs are. I'm a Windows guy. I mean, and that's fine. It works. You know.
Yeah, and I think that's what's driving me back towards saying, you know, This thing looks the business now.
Right.
Yeah, you know, the form factor's there, the battery life's there. You know, they come with I think pretty much the base model for most is now a base hard drive is a 128 gig SSD. So, you know, you've got the performance, you've got the
right
form factor.
You have an SSD in that?
Yeah, they come stock with SSD.
I'm jealous. Nice work.
Yeah. All so right. I'm looking at it going, well, you know,
yeah,
HP's got one coming out. Maybe I'll splash out when it hits.
Yeah, I'm hoping next summer to pick up some SSDs and drop those in our hard drive or in our laptops, and that'll upgrade. You know, we've got really I have three laptops in the house that would benefit immediately from an SSD. So hopefully prices will rebound on hard drives, on spinning hard drives, and that'll drive the SSD prices back down a little bit. I think those popped up a little bit too, just because I think people were moving, thinking, "Oh, if it's this expensive to buy a spinning drive, I might as well just buy the SSD." And so that drove prices up a little bit too. I think once the market gets flooded again with hard drives, we'll be back to ultra low prices, and SSDs hopefully will follow down with it. Andrew, for the last couple of weeks, you've thrown in this this online magazine publisher. What's that all about?
Yeah, the WRX club that I'm involved with, we've looked for about the last 12 years, had a full color printed magazine, and you know, with the cost of printing magazines and the like and whatnot, editorial costs and everything, we've been looking for some other options. And one of the things that came up is a website called issue.com, which is ISSU.com.
It's a great way to spell that, by the way.
Yeah,
ISSUU.
Yeah, you've got issues if you need.
How do you spell that?
I think issue.com spelled the normal way goes there as well.
That's how you spell it in Australia, right? ISSUU, right?
Yeah, yeah. our English isn't that broken yet.
Anyways, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, so what it gives you, it gives you the ability to author an online magazine, which then you can have subscribed through RSS readers and downloadable as PDFs. So we're looking to move our entire quarterly publication into a purely online format, and this was one of the things that came up. And they've got I think at the moment they've got a couple of thousand online magazines being published by various people, and you know, some of them are getting, you know, hundreds of thousands of views a month.
Hmm. So what's the free version get you here, that is basically the ability to create your own and then post it?
Yes. Yeah, so you get the ability to create, post a magazine, and then they have a paid version as well, which gives you better statistics about how your magazine's being read and where it's being read by and things like that. So two versions, kind of a very, very cool system or offering. And they got an honorable mention in the Webby Awards for 2009 and 2010, I think.
Of course, the audience for this is tablet devices, right? Folks that want to read these things on tablets. I mean, that's the main... Yeah. That's the main target audience, right?
Yeah, tablet or browser reading. I don't tend to read a heck of a lot via the tablet, just because I don't, the WebOS tablet isn't that great for something like this. But you know, browser reading, you know, sitting at the desk at lunchtime or something like that, that's quite easy to, you know, grab an electronic magazine and you know, throw it up on the 24-inch widescreen and flip through it.
My good friend, because he doesn't even know who I am, but I listen to a lot of Craig Ferguson, or watch Craig Ferguson on the Late Late Show here in the U.S. And, you know, of course, Craig is from Scotland. I find him very, very funny. But one of the things he says all the time is when he'll talk about newspapers, and he'll say, kids, those are like a paper blog. And it's kind of funny that, you know, we may come, you know, as we look at magazines, right? We may come a day when, like, what's the magazine? You know, that may completely go by the wayside.
Where do I download that magazine thing from?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And people will say, remember when these used to come to your door?
Yeah.
Something like that.
back in the old days.
Yeah, back in the old days. All right. We always, when it's the three of us together, we always talk about the old days. You've got something in here talking about a Skype replacement for the iPhone and Android.
One of the guys at work was who travels quite a lot. Introduced me to this one. It's a product called Viber, which is V-I-B-E-R, and it's a voice over IP client for the Android and iPhone platform, which is a lot lighter than Skype. So one of the things for people with the lower powered smartphones is that Skype is fairly processor intensive, and this app seems to be a lot less processor and memory intensive, and even from a bandwidth perspective, if you're in a fairly low bandwidth area, it seems to give you a lot better voice quality, and it integrates right into the phone, into your address book. On the Android platform, you can jump into your people application, you know, select someone who's running it, and then just dial them straight through Viber instead of a normal cellular network.
But that's peer-to-peer, right? So they got to be in the Viper network.
It is. They need to be on the Viper network. But yeah. You subscribe as your cell phone number as opposed to subscribing as a user.
Okay. Can you use your Google voice number as your subscriber number?
I guess. I'm not sure.
Okay.
We don't have Google Voice in Australia.
Oh, okay.
Colonial Outpost, remember?
Yeah. We really need to get you guys just consumed into the United States.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm about ready to move. Now that Andrew's got a decent web connection, I'm
you're thinking Melbourne's not a bad place to live, huh?
but of course, with the speed cameras, I might have to build a desert buggy. That's all.
There's no place safe, Gary. There's no place safe. Yeah, you know, Andrew, I'm always a little hesitant because, you know, everybody lives. It's like trying to move off Facebook, you know, and there's a little battle brewing between my friends right now, local friends between Facebook and Google Plus. And so I'm starting to see little, is anybody using Google Plus? You know, what's Google Plus is dead, you know. And so that's, you know, to move, because I'd love to, with Sarah having the iPhone and me having the Android, of course, Skype would be the right way to communicate that way. But Skype is really bad on the iPhone. It's really bad. Awful. And of course, if they would have Google Hangout capabilities on phones, which I'm sure is coming at some point, but that would work, but that's not available yet. So we still don't have great options for video.
A database video or database communication, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
it's a bit of a paradigm shift, isn't it, compared to where we were a few years back. You know, a few years back we're all sitting there going, you know, I can call you on an unlimited voice plan, and now we're looking at it going, how can I call you using my data plan?
No, right on. Right. Nobody calls anymore. I mean, that was the way to do it, right? And we begged for unlimited. And as soon as it went unlimited, it was like, oh no, I want a text.
Yeah.
How does that, you're telling me, you know, how does that work? And text is horribly convenient. And I know why, because people can send it and it doesn't, it's for low priority messages, right? That can be picked up at any time. And it is horribly convenient. That is odd. My younger kids all have phones now. We ditched our voice line and went all cell. And, they use 2 or 3 minutes of voice a month. They don't even know how to call. You mean they're like, so why don't you call me? Oh, well, I don't know how to do that on my phone. You know? Are you kidding me? No, it's not what they said, but it's kind of like that, you know, with the kids. They just
there was an article or a news story, I think it was just last week, about a company that informed all of its employees that they would no longer be using email. They want everything done on a social network.
Right. Right. Right.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, a couple of years ago, I was meeting with some guy, and I told him how broken email has gotten, especially in the corporate world. It's very broke, and it's abuse, and it's horrible for the most part. And I said, you know, there'll come a day when we'll ditch, you know, email will go by the way, you know, will go away for the most part. And Collison, you're crazy. That'll never happen. And and I think we're beginning to see. I think we're beginning to see some of that. There's some cracks in it. It's just a broken system. And, you know, we would at Gallup, if we shut down email tomorrow, we'd go out of business. I mean, we're so dependent on it. But there will come a day when things will change to more, you know, voice or video or text or that kind of communication that's not so permanent. You know, most of our communication, I would figure about 60 or 70% of our communication is disposable. But email keeps everything.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
And so,
I still get the phone call saying, do you remember we worked on a project 6 years ago and someone sent an email about blah, 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 blah. And I'll go, let me go back to my mail server, which is how I refer to my Outlook my PST files. And invariably, I can find it.
Yeah. But it shouldn't be there, Andrew.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. That kind of data, right? So you have... you have unstructured data that's important to the organization that's buried behind an account that only you can get to.
Yeah, and if I leave, it's gone.
Yeah, right. They just clear it out. So I don't think from a business process standpoint, we've thought all the way through that. And I'm not saying, when I say we, I'm not talking about where I work as we have, but I think collectively we don't necessarily think about that. And that if it's that important, it should have made its way onto a collaboration site of some sort.
That's my SharePoint.
Yeah. Well, notice I said collaboration site, right? And, Wiki or I'm a big advocate for using a WordPress blog for documentation purposes. I mean, I think a blog is a perfect platform for documentation for a system. Because the way, it lays things out in order, it's crawlable, you can do a lot of stuff with it, you can add text, you can add pictures. I mean, there's tons of things that you can attach, we put attachments to a post. It's a great way of doing that. But when I said a couple years ago to a bunch of technology people, hey, let's use a blog for our documentation format. Whoa! Are you kidding me? You know, someday somebody will say, hey, let's use a blog. To
And you'll go, oh, there's a novel concept.
There's a great idea. So anyway, so I think there's some different ways to think about that. From an email perspective. So, Gary, from your own, are you using Outlook at home?
Oh yeah.
And you have a mail server, right?
No, I just use it to bring in my Verizon email account.
Oh, okay.
And I'm the same way though. I store everything. Yeah. I got copies from 1994 or whenever.
Right. Yeah. Most do. For sure. So, okay. Andrew, do we get to everything that we've been ignoring you on for the last couple weeks?
I think we have.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
You're caught up. You're up to date.
I'm caught up.
Gary, last week, congratulations, by the way. You're caught up, Andrew. Take the rest of the day off.
Okay.
Hey, it's Friday afternoon for you, right?
It is.
It's a nice day outside.
Yeah.
As he looks outside. Yeah. Oh, maybe I'll take the rest of the day off.
It's so hot. I've got to have the air conditioning on, so I'll stay inside, I think.
Okay. That's not that hot.
It is.
Gary, last week, Christian talked a little bit about his IX web hosting nightmare. Now, don't disparage me, because he had talked me into IX web hosting, and I'm still there.
It's okay. The thing that you have to be aware of is we just found out incrementally that I think they've changed. If anybody's interested in getting into web hosting and using a third party to host a website, you read through the terms of service agreement, and it basically says we can alter this agreement anytime we want for any reason we want. And so it's basically there are no terms of service other than when the web host company decides that your bandwidth or consumption of resources.
Right.
Exceeds a certain level, they can just do whatever they want to do. And that's what's happened to us. The first limitation that we ran into, which you guys probably may have heard about, was we have a school that we administer the website for, a music school where Christian takes his music lessons. And they needed to send out a shotgun email to everybody that's subscribed to the school. So all the students and families, which is about 300 emails. Well, that was our first big disruption, where IX wouldn't send out that many emails in one shot through that account. So they limited how many emails a single user could send out. So we had to resolve that problem by using an SMTP server and rerouting through SendGrid. And bottom line, we got it.
Yeah. I remember Christian working on that one.
Right. Now, the next problem comes up. Most of you probably are aware that one of Christian's primary activities is running bios-mods.com, where they crack just about every known BIOS out there and allow you to, enable the hidden features and to slip the BIOS code and do a lot of customizations to the BIOS so that you can upgrade your CPU, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that site was getting upwards of, trying to think where they cut us off. but I think he was like up to like 300 simultaneous connections on the site. And so they shut the site down because we were using too many resources.
Right.
But you go to the website where you sign up for this stuff. Oh, unlimited space, unlimited this, unlimited that. They don't ever tell you that if you build a popular site that people actually want to go to, that what they do is they start to throttle you and shut you down, and then they try to sell you their VPS service and bump you up to the more expensive stuff. So what we did was we said, okay, if we have to move to a VPS, we'll do that, but not with you guys. So if you go to bios-mods.com right now, it is actually up and running on the new VPS server, which we're paying $3 a month for.
Right. Yeah, he worked a pretty sweet deal there.
Yeah, sure. So, but it's like anything else. You know, if you do enough Google searches, you find what you want. And he's put in a lot of time on it because you have to set up your own operating system on the share, and you got to build everything from scratch, and there's no support. It's just, yeah, here you go. $3 a month, it's yours. You know?
Which is why it's $3 a month.
Exactly.
It's not for the faint at heart. I mean, this is not your average guy stuff.
But I just, you know, I'm really ticked off. I mean, we've been with IX for like 4 or 5 years. We've got probably 8 or 9 websites active, and they pull this on us. It's like, okay, not a problem. I got the message. So we're moving elsewhere. You should be all right on your site unless the volume and the traffic gets to a point.
So far, so good. You know, we get maybe a couple hundred hits a day. So not going to push that threshold yet.
Yeah, he's getting, I think, what is it, like 3,000 unique IPs a month?
Oh, I think it might be more than that. He was spouting off some pretty ridiculous numbers for us last week. And
yeah, no, it's gone through the roof.
Yeah, I'm still amazed. It's that is such a small niche. And
well, he's permeated Google, so anytime anybody does a motherboard search, a BIOS search, or whatever, bingo, bios-mods.com pops up and directs you right to the site. So
right, yeah, but still. I mean, it's still such a niche, but it's doing real well. I mean, good for him. He's built a nice site, and I know he's grown that thing fourfold, fivefold since he took it over.
Oh yeah,
a couple of years ago. He's done a nice job on it.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, I think Gary, I think you're right. The lesson in that is not don't use IX web hosting, although that might be true. But I'm still prepared. I'm still their customer. Yeah, unlimited. I think we know this right from the cell phone deal that unlimited does not necessarily mean unlimited. And you know, I got that nice letter from my internet service provider that said, "Hey, we got this nice little tool that you can check your bandwidth with." Yeah. And I'm like, "Oh, really? What? Why?" And then at the bottom of the email, it was like, "Well, you know, we actually only want you to use 200 gig a month, and you're using 400." And so that's the beginning. I mean, they're starting to fire some shots across the bow. It won't be long, I think, before I get metered in some way, which changes my backup strategy a little bit in the way I use cloud storage, I think. It this weekend I kind of cleared out. I use Voila, and I have 160 gig there, and so it's enough to kind of cover everything I've got. And so, you know, I just cleared it out. I was like, well, it's been a while. It's kind of messy. So I just deleted all the shadow copies, all the versions. I took the thing back to the Stone Age. And then I said, reload. And it, you know, 100, there goes 120 gig right up to the, you know, over the course of about 3 days. It moved about 120 gig through 4 days, 120 gig up there. And well, that's, I mean, on a 200 gig bandwidth cap, that's a lot. If that's going to really be the case. And so I think the message to people listening, you should know which caps are if you have them, or you should, you know, unlimited does not necessarily always mean unlimited.
No. Yeah. Okay. You know, Christian now, he wants me to call Microsoft and see if we can get one of those box trailers, you know, where they dump the whole unit into the backyard. Wants me to hook up a T3 line in the backyard. And, you know, it's like, yeah.
He wants to be his own hosting provider.
He does.
Why don't you just get a Google box buried in your backyard?
Yeah, so that's coming.
He might own Google eventually.
Yeah, I hope so.
Nothing. Yeah, for your retirement's sake, right?
Amen.
Very
just
good.
Just to pay the tuition in college.
Do you have a new case?
Yeah, this is one that that's why I know for a while back you were talking about your solutions. So I just put it up on the
Lee and Lee PC.
Yeah, the PCQ25B will hold 7 3.5-inch hard drives and looks like a pretty nice unit if you want to do a build with a mini ITX motherboard. So yeah, probably more expensive than the off-the-shelf HP unit you're running, but
yeah, a little bit. I mean, about half the price of the unit I just bought.
Right, but you could pack a lot of power in a little bit of space.
Yeah, yeah. Well, ironically, in this microserver, right? I mean, so it's got the four drives that are SATA, rated in there. So it's on a RAID card. That's on the board. And then it's got an open SATA connection, but I could put another card in there, and I could drop an IC dock 4-bay, that fit inside a 5 1/4-inch and get 4 more laptop drives in there if I wanted to.
Yep.
And then I could, plug a plethora of USB drives on it. So.
Oh yeah. And there's those other towers too.
Right.
Trantic who makes them, but there's a lot of towers where you can pop SATA drives in.
Yeah.
And connect them up.
No, this is certainly a very nice case. I think this case has made its way around the Home Server Show community.
Probably.
Well,
I heard the BYOBs talking about it a while back as well.
No.
Yeah, it's a nice looking unit from the pictures on Newegg. Looks like it'd be a nice one to build with.
If you're going to do the full fauché, it's required to buy this case.
But I different strokes for different folks. I get more fun out of the building the hardware. That's what I enjoy doing. If I got an afternoon where I can sit with, hard drives and CPUs and my little screwdrivers and, put the stuff together, I really enjoy doing that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of fun to me.
There is fun in that. I do enjoy. I am kind of looking forward to this. I'm going to mod this microserver box a little bit. And it's not a full build, but I'm going to do a few modifications, pack some things in there, change some things around. So that's kind of fun. I was glad it didn't come with an external power supply. Everything's built right into it. So that is cool. So no, I hear you from that perspective. Well, we're running out of time, but Gary, I know Conan O'Brien, I think it was Conan O'Brien, used to have a segment called In the Year 2000. And he would, you ever remember that? And he would take a flashlight and make predictions. You have a few predictions for the future here you want to throw out there?
Yeah, I just a lot of stuff rolling around in the back of the old gray matter. And as I do a lot of reading and research, if desktops are even a thing that exists in the next few years, I think within 2 years, you're not going to see hard drives on anything for the home anymore. I think it's a thing of the past. They're all going to, SSDs are going to be replacing the hard drives for typical desktop and home usage and tablets and laptops and things of that nature. And you saw with this crisis with the hard drives from the flooding that really, you could get an SSD for a couple $100 and a decent sized hard drive was almost the same price.
Yeah,
so,
right.
I got to the point where I wasn't going to buy another hard drive. I was going to buy some SSDs for a change to upgrade the HTPC and things like that. But we did get some encouraging news that Western Digital is back online producing in Thailand. And I'm watching the Newegg and some of the prices on the hard drives are starting to come down. So it looks like supply is starting to come back online. But one of the interesting articles I read was the prediction of the death of cable TV as we know it, that basically it's in its death throes and the handwriting's on the wall. Verizon this week announced that they're going to be rolling out a on-demand Netflix-like video on-demand, movies on-demand service. So the article I was reading was saying that within 5 years, the traditional cable service that we know is more than likely going to be kind of like the standard phone lines that
right.
That we have now that nobody uses.
Right.
The other thing that I got some good news to report. I know you did a show on it, but we've had a Silicon Dust HD Home Run Prime on the network for a couple months now that we did have a lot of problems with.
Oh, really?
And yeah, just it worked, but it had some glitches and it wasn't working well over wireless. And their latest update of their drivers and their firmware seems to be much, much better. It has addressed those issues. And the last test I ran, I actually had three wireless devices running live TV and was doing other things on the network and stressing it with other wireless devices at the same time, and everything held solid. So,
oh, good.
Another neat thing that we actually did was we set up virtual private networking on the tablet. And while I was in Baltimore over Thanksgiving, we connected to the server at home and to the HD Home Run Prime, and we were able to watch Verizon cable on my tablet over a VPN connection.
That's
from
nice.
400 miles away.
So. Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
So yeah, it's come full circle, and
right.
It looks like it's ready for prime time. And I would say anybody that's reasonably comfortable with network devices, it's a ready for prime time product now.
Andrew,
I'm still waiting for my VPN account in the Maple Grove, the
Maple Grove
network, so that I can get my American cable fixed from Australia.
Yeah, well, you know, talk to my tech; he'll fix you up.
What else? You got anything else? Any other predictions, Gary?
That was pretty much most of them. Like I say, I think that's the evolution. I just think hard drives are only going to be found on servers within a few years. They're going to be big, and they're just going to be on servers, and most people that need storage above and beyond what they need for their home products are just going to do it in the cloud. And the more sophisticated user, of course, will have his own home server. But
yeah. Well, you know, we talk a lot about this on the Home Server Show, and of course, we unlimited bandwidth individuals, I have no problem moving some of my backup and storage to the cloud without any issues. But I know folks who want to watch video and some of the things like, you know, like that, or have bandwidth caps, that's more difficult to, you know, we are kind of conditioned to a certain set of conditions, one of those being unlimited bandwidth. And and so some of those cloud solutions aren't quite ready for prime time, or at least ready for some of those. This is interesting. My home server just told me my password doesn't match.
Yeah, that's an old frequent problem.
I hadn't seen that one in a while.
I used to get that a lot with the version 1 software.
Yeah. Anyways, so I don't disagree with you. I think SSD will come up pretty quick here, and it once manufacturers start putting it in. Just like when we switched over from 32-bit to 64-bit, once the manufacturer switched it over, so goes the rest of the market. And so I expect to see, you know, laptops coming out with when we get reasonably priced 120 or 160 gig SSDs, because you got to have a large enough drive to make that actually work.
Yeah, I was looking at 120s at $200. And that's what I say, you know, I'm looking at, like I say, a 2 terabyte drive last week was like over $300.
Right.
And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Would I rather have a 2 terabyte, $300 storage device, or would I rather have a $200 SSD with 120 gigabytes on it? Yeah, I'm going to go for the 120 gigabyte drive if I'm going to spend that kind of money.
Yeah. Well, and my sweet spot has been $1 a gig. I've kind of set that as the okay, when the SSDs, when I can find them for $1 a gig, I'm in. And we're pretty close. I've seen a few deals and a few specials where that's in, but that's kind of what I've been. That's kind of been my benchmark.
Yeah, I think that'll come back. If you go to Newegg right now, the OCZ Agility 3, 120 gigabytes, SATA 3, $169.99.
Yeah.
So it's getting there.
Right. No, and you know, we flirted with that $1 a gig right before this hard drive disaster.
Right. And that's right. Probably because the hard drives went up so much in price, the SSDs started to sell, and that may have delayed some of the,
well, of course,
you know,
yeah,
the price
right
coming
they,
down
it pushed the price of those up too, right? Because
sure, yeah,
demand went up on those, and that pushes price up, and yep, and so, you know, one disaster caused a rise in the price of the other. I think we're in for a dip. I'm just going to call it right here. I think, you know, the market is ripe right now for hard drives, and everybody is going to slam to get as many hard drives out as they can right now to take advantage of $300 or whatever. I know the prices are starting to dip some, but they're still a little high, and that market will flood with drives that people can't sell, and they'll go back on sale. And
yeah,
I think
that's what I'm waiting for. Yeah, the Seagate, that's another one I had in my notes for the next week's show, but I'll bring it up now. Seagate next year is going to be coming out with their top of the line drive next year are all going to be hybrid drives. I've got one of the Seagate 2.5-inch hybrid Momentus drives that Christian's actually using in his netbook right now, and it's fast. It's a 7200 RPM 500 gigabyte drive with a 4 gigabyte SSD, kind of buffering between the, you know, the drive and the platter.
Right.
So, you know, he's getting real snappy performance out of that. And next year, the 3 gigabyte drives are supposed to be hybrid drives with, I think they're going to be running like 16 or 32 gigabyte SSDs in a hybrid setup with the drive. So that's kind of what I'm waiting for. I think I'll be buying the cheaper. I'm looking at the Crucial M4 for $209, 128 gigabyte SATA 3 drive. That looks like a pretty reasonable buy right now, but I'm going to hold off on any more hard drives until Seagate rolls out those new 3 gigabyte hybrids, and then time to do another array.
Yeah. And I don't like the hybrid idea. I'm not a big fan of that at all.
No,
it's just, I mean, I get the concept, but I'd rather just drop an SSD in there that's maybe 60 gig, put the OS on it. And then if I need more than 60, now you can't do this in a laptop, obviously, but if I'm going to do a laptop, then I'm going to move as much of that to the cloud as it can handle, right? If it's music that I'm trying to get, I'm just going to do it to Google Music or Amazon Music or whatever. So that's just my opinion. I mean,
but it's incredible. I mean, we were buying those Samsung F3 2 terabyte drives for $69 a pop.
Yeah, well, we had some specials out there. I mean, we've had some average guy deals out there for hard drives as of a couple months ago.
And right now on Newegg, that same drive is $199.
No, that's dumb.
It's like, whoa.
Yeah, it'll come back down. It'll come back down indeed.
Yeah, I've got $130 profit on each one of the drives sitting in my eight drive RAID array. It's like, yes, I love this.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's all paper money though, Gary.
Yes, it is.
It's all paper until you sell it.
Yeah, but you know the nice part about it is we got enough storage in house now that we don't have to buy a hard drive.
Right.
So it's really nice. You know, that's another nice thing is when you really watch the prices of hardware and you grab the bargains, you really get yourself in a position where you're not at the mercy of the market. When something does happen, you don't need. You know, I got enough spare capacity that I'm not forced into buying a hard drive that's, you know, 300-400% inflated over what it ought to be.
Right.
So,
yep. Yeah. Now, right on.
Yeah. Reaching that critical mass is a big advantage.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely if you're a consumer, and this just makes sense, right? Watch for those deals. And when they come by, memory right now, you should be upgrading everything.
Yeah.
To just as much memory as you can put in there just because it's so cheap. So,
yep.
Well, gentlemen, our time is up. Gary, thanks for coming in relief tonight.
Yes, sir, as always.
Christian, it's always good to have you on. And Andrew, thanks for coming out on your lunch break. and joining us all the way from Melbourne. It's always good to have you out as well. I'll remind folks that we'll be back next week out here Tuesday. We do this Tuesday. We broadcast live. I don't even know what day it is. I'll just be honest with you. We broadcast live. Well, I do a live podcast now Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights. So it's I get a little confused. Each Thursday we are out here 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. If you want to join us live, if you've never listened live before, we'd encourage you to do that out at theaverageguy.tv/live. It's always fun. And of course, you can put your comments in chat. Thanks, Rennie and Tim and Jay, for coming out and being in chat tonight and joining us in the show. Appreciate you guys doing that. If you have a comment, question, you want to send us something nice to say, we just throw away the evil comments, but send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. And of course, you can subscribe. I always post a couple minutes before the show starts to let folks know, hey, we're out and live, and announcements about the podcast on Twitter, just at Jay Collison. Of course, you can find us on Facebook. Just search for The Average Guy Podcast. You can do the same thing in iTunes. That's an easy way to download it. And we have all the necessary links available out at The Average Guy TV. Gary, you're back next week, as well as you, Andrew. And I think we'll have it's you and Christian maybe next week. Well, you think we'll get Christian back? Gary?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
All right. Good enough. And the trifecta, no, the dualfecta will be in effect, and we'll have both Johnsons in the house. Dueling Johnsons.
Johnson and Johnson.
Very nice. Guys, have a good evening. We'll catch you back here next week on the Home Tech Podcast. Good night.
Hey, Jim.
See you guys.
Gary, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Busy, but good.
Well, I appreciate you filling in for Christian.
Yeah, he's pretty swamped. We have an exchange student with us from Spain this week.
Oh, wow.
So the boys have been busy.
Yeah, I saw, I saw something on Skype status for him saying that his Spanish is out of sight, given he's got someone who can speak natively with him.
Well, it was funny because the exchange student said that Christian speaks Spanish with a Chinese accent, which didn't make Christian very happy, but we thought it was pretty funny.
He speaks Spanish with a Chinese accent.
That was the comment.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, we all got a good chuckle out of that one.
Oh, man, that's a good one. How does that happen?
Apparently, Christian can't roll the R like he's supposed to.
I can't either.
Which is a really bad problem.
That's not in the...
Really bad.
Oh, you did. Did you see that email I sent you, Jim, about the touchpads going on eBay on Sunday?
You did. I saw that. I read that somewhere else as well. They're going to offer them to HP employees first.
How do they delineate on eBay who's an HP employee and who isn't?
I don't know, but they're dead to me.
Have you built your microserver as home server yet?
It's right there.
That one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
I was going to say, you want to try chucking a passive video card in that and running that as a workstation. I know three or four people doing it, and they reckon that they outperform a Pentium 4 or Pentium D 3 gig.
Yeah, but I really bought it to be the home server, so...
Yeah,
you know, there's not much. You got all these drive bays in it, right? That are, you know, that is.
What case did you use, Jim?
No, it's that HP microserver. The N, is it N40L?
N40L, yeah.
And so it's got the.
They're nice box.
I don't know if you can see that, but there's four bays in there inside the box.
Okay.
And
that's it, Gary. Yeah, it's a dual core AMD thing with cold swap drives.
Yeah, you know, so it comes with a tray and drive.
Did you pull that out?
Huh?
Did you just pull that out hot?
Oh, I did.
So much for that one. Time to maybe rebuild the array, you think?
Still on.
Cool.
But they're meant to be a cold swap drive.
Oh, I better delete what I have in the show notes then.
Yeah, it does say on here, non-hot plug HHD, you know, hard drive. But it's still on. This is the weird thing. It must be in whatever's in memory, because it's still showing. I mean, you'd think it blue screen, right? If you pull the hard drive.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the system drive.
What are you running? What OS is it running?
2011 home server 2011.
Yeah, which drive hurt, is it?
Say that again.
Is that the system drive? Did you say?
Yeah, this is the system drive. It's
so you're just running off of memory then.
Dashboard just went down. Oh, okay. No, it's turned itself off.
Did it just die?
It just rebooted.
Funny that.
I'm so excited about showing that to you.
I'm kind of glad for your sake, Jim, that Christian's not on this call.
would he be giving them like the real Raz, would he?
Oh, there'd be a fair bit of shit being hung, I think.
That's awesome. I just pulled that right out.